Hi, I'm Kim Cotola. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. There are many more podcasts available online at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
We are so pleased to have you part of the program tonight, especially if there have been things in your life that just don't seem to make sense to you. One of the things that I really hope we're going to accomplish in this conversation with our guest this time out is to help you connect the dots of your polka-dotted heart, as I like to think of it and as I speak about it. You know, oftentimes there's a spot in your heart where something happened in the past, and there's a spot in your heart where something is happening in the future, and you have a vague sense that they're connected, but you're not really even aware of it. And if you could just make that connection, there would be freedom, there would be joy, there would be release from that first spot on your heart. And so we're going to talk about the issue of preventing abortion and helping those it hurts, because that's our primary mission here at Cradle My Heart Radio. But our guest, Dawn Scott Damon, can also address many other issues that affect a woman's heart. Dawn, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you tonight and share the story so that maybe throughout this broadcast, someone else will find some hope and some healing as well.
Amen. Dawn is a pastor and speaker and author. Her book, When a Woman You Love Was Abused, is a reader's favorite gold medal award winner and published by Kriegel Publications. And she's also working on another book entitled When the Woman Abused Was Me. Dawn worked closely with Cece Murphy, who wrote 90 Minutes in Heaven and When a Man You Love Was Abused, and together they presented conferences. She also writes a blog for women who've experienced trauma called Freedom Girl Sisterhood, and she's been a contributor to many other works. And so we really laud your accomplishments, Dawn, which come from your personal experience as well as the training that the Lord led you into as you are on your own healing journey. So let's talk about your story. You know, what I like to say is people only need to know enough of my story to know how far the Lord had to go to bring me back to himself. Because there are some parts I just, you know, we just don't even need to go there. But, so tell me about, just share your story of where you were when you needed God's healing touch.
Mm. Well, like you said, boy, where would you start? There's so much to share, but I'll just tell you that I was the third daughter of my family, so I had two older sisters, and I was raised in a Christian home. I remember going to church every Sunday and every Sunday night, and I was in the little missionettes program, and or pilgrim girls, maybe we called it back then, but had all that teaching of the Lord. And my father and my mother both were pastor's kids, so I was very familiar with the story of Jesus Christ. And at 8 years old, naturally accepted Jesus into my heart as my Savior, the truth, knew God. So had those happy moments of a child. And the backdrop of security and love was present in my home. But something happened to change all of that. And one night I remember going to bed as an innocent little girl. And the next morning, waking up with tons of shame and feeling abandoned, feeling frightened, feeling overwhelmed, wondering what was that all about. I can't exactly tell you how old I was. I can't tell you the first time it happened. Some of that's blocked out. But what I can tell you is that there was a perpetrator. And my hero by daytime, who was my father, became a perpetrator by night and entered my bedroom, and that began probably a 7-year stretch of molestation, sexual molestation. And I just remember thinking, I have a secret and I can't tell anyone, and I don't know what to do with this, and where's my mom, and is this happening to my sisters, or why me? What do I do? And instead of being, you know, I was a shy girl, but I was a happy girl. I was loved being on stage, believe it or not, and making my family laugh and telling jokes. And yet, you know, internally, I was shy. But this became a change in me where I just began to withdraw, and I began to get angry. And I remember feeling angry at God, like, what kind of God? You know what? You guys are up there singing in the choir, and you're leading worship, and no thank you. I don't want any part of that. So I remember really closing my heart off to God and to church and to church people. Even though I was still there, my heart began to drift far away. And so I think, Kim, I was probably about 11 years old, maybe 12 when it started. I know I was 17 or 18 when it ended, all the way up until I got out of the house and went to college. I never knew what night it was going to be that my door would open. And I would maybe hear the footsteps, or I would smell the alcohol. My dad developed a drinking problem, was an alcoholic. And I never knew what night it was going to be that all of a sudden I would feel this presence in my bed. And I knew that I would freeze. And I'd say, you know what, just be strong, just hang in there, just swallow. In a little while, this is going to be over, and you're going to be fine. And I wasn't fine. I discovered something, that it's not over when it's over. And when I got out of the house and I thought, this is it, now it's over, I was just beginning to really feel what had happened to me and the anger involved, and subsequently the decisions and the choices that I made as a result of trying to escape this sense of abuse and a shame.
You know, Dawn, this must be a difficult story for you to recount. And I know that when I go to a difficult place in my past, it's only by God's grace that we can do that. It's only because the shame has been removed. But I would just right now want to thank you for opening your heart to us, because this has got to be one of the toughest things to share. Before you continue with the story, I also want to underscore that there are those of us who have children who didn't necessarily raise them to be pilgrim girls and in the missionettes, and feel as though that's a deficit that can never be overcome. And what I'm hearing in your story is that, no, I had all that good grounding. My parents did the right thing in the beginning. So there's a glimmering of hope here for us as mothers who have either been deficient or derelict in our duties, that our children are still in the Lord's care. And that, you know, as we follow Christ, we become His very daughters. So continue with the story now as you reached adulthood.
Yes. Well, thank you for bringing up that point, because absolutely, I know that I was never out of the grip of God's grace, and that His love for me pursued me. I mean, even when I shook my fist at God and said, you know, leave me alone, it was like His love was stalking me. God just pursued me, and I'm so thankful that He never gives up on any one of us. Because I felt like I was unworthy. I felt like I didn't deserve God's love. For me, now I'm still young. I'm probably 15 years old, and I just know I matured early. I matured quickly. I had two older sisters. I've been brought into a world that no girl should even understand at that age. And I developed early. And you know what, Kim? I didn't even understand, as so many young girls don't, but I had the bright red hair, and that was attractive apparently to men. And I was put in this world where I didn't realize what I had, and I started getting a lot of attention, and I didn't know how to handle that, but I knew that somehow it felt better than the negative attention that I was getting from my dad. Somehow I felt like, gosh, this kind of replaces the feeling of being ashamed and dirty and wrong, and not even that I've committed a mistake, but that I am a mistake. And I started to feel the power, albeit twisted, of having affection and attention. And it doesn't take, you know, brain science to recognize the next step in that parade is that, you know, people would say to me, oh, my goodness, you're so pretty. I bet your dad answers the door with a shotgun. I specifically remember hearing that more than once, and I remember thinking inside, no, he doesn't. He's the one with the shotgun. He's the one that's hurting me. My champion is the one that's devastating me. And I just felt like I wasn't worthy of being championed. You know, gosh, everybody thinks that I should have been protected and loved, but I wasn't. So what's wrong with me? And I remember when I was receiving this affection and this attention, that the first lie often for an abuse survivor is that love equals sex. And so if you want love, you give sex. And I fell right into that. There was nothing for me to treasure. As other girls who were pure, other girls who had a gift to give their husband, as we were told in youth group growing up, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, well, I don't have that gift, so I guess I don't get the best. I won't be able to wait for someone wonderful. So I remember just feeling like I could just give sex away and hope to receive love in the meantime. And so I did. I fell into that. I fell into that area of being very promiscuous.
And eventually you did make the choice for abortion. I want to get to that part of the story because I know that sexual abuse and abortion go hand in hand. I know that often in the case of minors, abortion is used to cover sexual abuse. And I know that, you know, even girls who have been literally trafficked instead of just being abused by family members or someone they should be able to trust, again, abortion is the thing, the engine that drives it. It's the thing that allows the abuse and the whole system to stay in place.
Yes.
So tell me about the circumstances there.
Well, I was still a young girl, and I felt like I fell in love with this boyfriend that I met, this young guy, and he really did become a safe place for me in my mind. This was someone who was a very caring individual, and the relationship was not sexual for a year and a half, and we just became really good friends. But my parents didn't like him, and they wanted me to have nothing to do with him for various reasons. You know, he wasn't the right faith, and he wasn't the right color, and he wasn't the right age, and all of these things. But I was not giving him up. So that relationship went underground. And as a result, we couldn't date. We couldn't be in public. So we always found ourselves in private places. And I did indeed become pregnant. And to save the relationship, to cover, to save embarrassment, all of the reasons that we convince ourselves, the logic that we give ourselves, the justifications, and those things, I knew I had to cover. I knew I had to hide it. And so I did. I made that choice for abortion. I had to keep it from my parents so that I wouldn't lose the love of my life as well. And because this wasn't the first time, maybe they had sent me to Indiana one time to be with my grandparents, that maybe that would straighten me up. And I wasn't a rebellious child. Really, I just was in a relationship that they didn't want me to be in. So I made that choice, and it devastated me, Kim. It devastated me. But it was just one more scar. It was just one more thing to hide. It was just one more reason why I would say, push the emotions down. When my older sister was going through difficulty, she reminded me not too long ago that my advice to her was, don't feel, don't cry, just push it down. Don't, because if you start crying, you're going to come unraveled. And I thought that was my philosophy of life. Don't feel, don't, just push it down. And so I did that all throughout my young adulthood until finally I couldn't do it anymore because my body began to betray me with panic attacks and depression and anxiety, where I knew I have to deal with what is in my past. I can't move forward until I deal with what's in my past.
Mm. You know, I think that this is the idea that depression and anxiety and panic attacks develop out of what we refuse to express and experience in our emotions is actually our bodies betraying the pathology, isn't it, Dawn?
Yes.
I mean, it's actually our bodies signaling the need to deal now with
yes.
what is really going on here. And so how in the world did you get on that healing path?
Well, I knew I couldn't go on any further because, yeah, you know, and like you said, you didn't say it exactly this way, but right, pain is not the enemy. It just lets us know that there is one, that there was something that was going to destroy me if I didn't look at it. My body was loving me by giving me those signals. But I woke up one morning with absolute sheer panic. I had never known this in my life. I was such a strong girl. I didn't feel. I was a bulldog. I was a fighter. You know, I was career-oriented or task-oriented, get things done, prove to everybody you are something, perform. So I was all in that trap. But I couldn't press through it. I couldn't will myself out of it. I couldn't will myself to feel good, and it just went downhill from there. So finally I sat with a doctor in his office, and I said, just give me something to make this go away. And he said, well, we can give you some medication, but we really feel like you know, you've got some trauma in your background. You really need to maybe see a psychologist or talk to a counselor. And I was so angry at that man. I thought, you quack, you don't have a clue. I'm not going to do. I said, listen, we don't need to drag the river. We've already found the body. In other words, I know I was abused, you know, I'm over it now. I forgave him, so it's gone, it's done. Forgiveness, you know, just is that get out of jail quick kind of card. And but you know what? I found out that just taking a pill wasn't going to do it. And when I finally realized, I was petrified of feeling, and I was petrified of looking at the reality of what I had experienced. But once I was willing, and the Holy Spirit now, Jesus was my Lord. I had recommitted my life to him, and I started praying. And I just felt like the Lord was giving me a peace in my heart to say, Dawn, you can trust me. I'll walk with you. I'll take you on this journey. I'll never leave you. I won't forsake you. I had to wrestle with the question, where were you, God? Why? Where were you? And that was part of my healing journey. But I began to take this walk with God and go back and sort it out. And it was a process. But part of what I did was I went to a support group for women who had made the choice to abort their baby. And that brought a tremendous amount of healing for me. And I didn't want to do it. I went kicking and scratching. But by the end of that six-week time, there was such tremendous healing and joy and freedom. It gave me the courage to continue the journey through the sexual abuse healing, completely connected.
And if you, oh, amen. You know, and I really want to underline what Dawn has just said. If you are someone with an abortion in your past, I share the same story, that it was in the support and the love of a structured group for this issue that I really began to be able to heal. The Lord also was the lover of my soul, you know, was my wonderful counselor, brought me to a place of being able to be brave enough to say I needed the help. But it was that group that really, really brought the healing. And if you've been putting it off, avoiding it, if you've been saying that'll be too painful, I don't know what the barrier is for you, but I really urge you to give yourself this gift now, as soon as you can. And the links are there at cradlemyheart.org for you to find your healing. You can go to Option Line. You can go to Heartbeat International, find a local group at a pregnancy resource center generally. But there are other ministries. Just browse cradlemyheart.org on the blog roll on the right side menu of the page. So, Dawn, as we're thinking about this, I want to ask you about your relationship with your mom, because many of us were urged to abort by our mothers. Many of us were in a position like you where, no, I know I need to keep this from mom because it won't be okay if mom knows that I'm pregnant. And there's a healing that needs to occur in the relationship there as well. Tell me about, you know, you said early on, you wondered, where's mom? How did all of this play out in your relationship with your mother?
Well, my parents did actually know. I was not able to hide it. At the end of the whole thinking that I was going to hide it and then I was going to protect and I was going to keep it all from them, like I said, we lie to ourselves and we make these justifications, but at the end of it, my parents did know. And they supported that because we were all into covering up everything at that time. You know, my poor mom, my mom and I have a great relationship. My mom has, my mom has helped me do some seminars with the book that I've written. My mom was kind of the second victim of sexual abuse. She didn't have any idea what my father was doing. And so she really struggled. My mom was dealing with an alcoholic husband and trying to keep the family together and working a career. So I look back now from this position, and I have great sympathy and empathy for that. At the time, I did feel that neglect. I felt my mom wasn't there for me. I felt neglected. I felt like I was raising myself, like I was just kind of twisting in the wind to make my own decisions. And but I always knew my mom loved me. So even though I harbored some anger and had to go through that anger, not just with my dad, but with my mom, I knew that she did love me. And so that was part of my healing journey, is to deal with the mother wound and the father wound, and then telling them and them being a part of it, of the abortion experience, that we had to walk through that healing. You know, that they wouldn't have supported me had I chose life.
Sure. Well, you know, and praise God, there are many listening who have experienced abortion and have been on a healing journey and who are not yet able to share everything that has happened with their parents, even though they have otherwise good relationships with them. And so I pray that Dawn's story is an encouragement to you as you listen, that healing really is possible for the entire family unit. And Dawn, I know you've written an entire book on this and you've presented, you know, conferences that unfold over hours and days, with only about 3-4 minutes remaining. What, give us some direction for someone who has abuse, a history of abuse, as well as an abortion in their past, of where they can start to begin to live new and to, you know, have some hope.
Yes, well, absolutely. Well, I think the place to start is to get it out of the secret place and to begin to share your story, first of all, maybe even with yourself before God. So often we don't even tell ourselves the truth. We keep it buried. We deny it. We push it away. And it does, those things that we lock away in the basement of our soul, they do push their way up. And that inner child that's in us, that's grieving, that's hurting, needs to be validated, loved, needs to be heard and understood. So if you've not ever shared it with anyone, the beginning place is to begin to talk about it and share it. If there's a pastor that you trust, or you're someone that's in your life that you can be accountable to, or that is a trustworthy figure, or a counselor, but to begin to tell the story. And then as you tell that story, to find a place where you can grieve for yourself, to name the losses. You know, Kim, we've had many losses. If you've been abused as a child, you lost your freedom of a childhood, the innocence of a child. You lost trust issues. You had many things stolen from you. So many women, we don't have time for all of it, but struggle with sexual intimacy for the rest of their lives. There's struggle with panic attacks and anxiety. And the root goes back to being a child who felt hopeless and helpless. So we begin to share our story. We grieve for ourselves and we get on that healing path, which coming out of denial and making a decision to heal and saying, I will not be defined by this abuse or by this abortion experience. Abortion experience is difficult, even as you go on to have other children. I was so afraid something was going to be wrong with my child, that God would be punitive. And so many lies that the enemy had sowed into my heart. So that structured support group, that healing community, really became so valuable as I walked through those next seasons of life. Do yourself a favor. Love yourself enough to say, I'm strong enough today. I can deal with it today. God with me. I can look at the truth, and when I know the truth, I'll be set free.
Amen. Dawn Scott Damon, our guest, and again, you can learn more about her ministry at cradlemyheart.org. Now stay with us here on Faith Radio. We'll open up the phones for your calls at 1-800-811-3003, and we'll take a look at some of the top stories on the life issue in the news this week here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light needs to come. The light needs to come.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being a part of our broadcast tonight. This is Cradle My Heart Radio, and we are really pleased to have you with us. And this is the opportunity to discuss so much of what happened at the Heartbeat International Conference, because I could probably spend the rest of our broadcast year, the rest of our Sunday evenings together, telling you about people I met, talking about encouragements that we received, and sharing resources with you. And we will be doing that in the coming weeks. We're going to be airing many of the interviews that we collected while we were there. One that is someone who will be returning to Cradle My Heart Radio is Pastor John Enzer, and he's part of the training for pro-life apologetics, which is going to be, it's applied bioethics with pro-life apologetics emphasis at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. And I've mentioned that I completed the first two courses, which are for college credit, last summer, and will be completing the remaining two courses to get the complete certificate this coming July, with a lot of self-study before the two-week intensives in Bartlesville, which is just outside of Tulsa. John Enzer will be teaching us about the theology of life. We've already studied the ethics of abortion with Scott Klusendorf of The Case for Life. We've studied pro-life public speaking with Mark Newman of Speaker for Life. And now John Enzer will be training us on the theology of life, and he's really such an encouraging speaker. But I want to make available once more, as our pro-life resource tonight, Scott Klusendorf's book, The Case for Life, because I took this with me to Heartbeat, and it was a very, very popular resource. And I know there are many people already familiar with Scott's work who would love to have a copy of this book. And so if you call with a question or comment and join us on the air, we have up to three copies tonight, 1-800-811-3003, 1-800-811-3003. One of the things that we learn from Scott Klusendorf in Pro-Life Apologetics is that we have to be really careful to keep our eye on the ball and clarify the issue, particularly because many people will simply bow out, or they will assert that abortion is too complicated. It's such a complex issue. There's no one right answer for everyone, or any number of conclusions will come from this premise that it's too complicated. But it isn't a complex issue. The issue is, what is the unborn? And the way that we illustrate this is to say that if a child comes in while your back is turned to the sink and says, Mom, can I kill this? The first thing Mom's going to say is, what is it? If it's a snake, then yes, please, and take it back outside. If it's the neighbor boy, no, now we've got to have a serious conversation. Before we may ask, is it moral? Is it ethical? Is it acceptable to kill the unborn? What is the unborn? And then we make the case from science and philosophy and from logic and from theology for those who won't reject the theology out of hand, because many will with our postmodern world, about the case for life. So this book is the resource that tells you how to do it, 1-800-811-3003. And the reason that I want to come back to it tonight and talk about this once more is because one of the things that we've learned is that we can't make this about the fact that abortion is harmful to women as to why abortion is wrong. Now, I say that as a person who knows personally that abortion is harmful to women, but there was an amazing illustration of it with the airing of the Hush documentary at the Heartbeat Conference. And I mentioned this to you last week. I think it really bears repeating, and this is why. This filmmaker is a documentarian who set out to look at the public health consequences of abortion. She wasn't looking at it really from a human rights point of view. She wasn't looking at it from a religious point of view. She wasn't looking at it from any other lens other than what does this do to a woman's health? And she was aware that there is a controversy, and there are actually several controversies in the public health realm when it comes to abortion. Is there a link between abortion and breast cancer? Was her question. Is there a link between abortion and subsequent preterm labor and preterm birth? Her third question, is there a link between abortion and increased mental health problems in women? And she found many, 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 many sources to affirm that these links do indeed exist. And many, many, many peer-reviewed studies in medical journals with research to demonstrate the public health risks. But she also found monolithic institutions like the National Cancer Institute and the National Institute of Health and the American Psychological Association, which said no such links exist, and that those who assert that that these links exist are engaging in junk science, right? And so ad hominem attacks on the experts who are citing the research. But what's most stunning to me about this is the documentarian let us know immediately that she is a pro-choice feminist. She was raised in India by her mother and her grandmother, and she is very invested in the rights of women. And while it's clear that she found corruption and politicizing of the research data at the National Cancer Institute, at the National Institute of Health, at the American Psychological Association, she remained pro-choice. There was overwhelming evidence that there's a public health crisis in the lives of women 25 to 49 years old because of induced abortion. She was devastated by this and concluded, yet she remains pro-choice. And why? Because she believes women need abortion in order to have free, good lives. And we have got to be able to answer that argument. We have got to be able to be clear. And when you have the case for life in your toolkit, you will be so confident that you can stand with compassion and truth to answer those concerns. So, love to give you a copy tonight, 1-800-811-3003, 1-800-811-3003. The documentary has not yet been released. As I said, we had a private screening at the conference I was attending, but I, as a person who's been involved in media and has been a broadcaster all of my professional life for over 30 years now, this was one of the most upsetting bits of reporting that I think I have ever seen. Because, first of all, of the content, expert upon expert upon expert citing the research, and stonewall upon stonewall upon stonewall from the institutional you know, monolithic organizations debunking good, solid science. And then the reporter's conclusion, as she throws her lot in with the institutions, that she remains pro-choice. Shocking. 1-800-811-3003. But she does not report that she has an abortion in her past, but I don't know if she is sympathetic to someone close to her who has had one. I don't know the reason why people occupy a pro-choice worldview, but I know the answer. And the answer lies in honestly accepting the case for life, which says, medically, there is no controversy. When the Supreme Court said it was a potential life, they were wrong. Embryology textbooks agree that from conception, there's a distinct living and whole human being every time. And philosophically, we know that you are the embryo that you once were. You didn't become an embryo or become a child and now become an adult. You are the embryo you once were. There's no significant difference between the embryo you once were and the adult that you are now that would justify killing you now, but not then, and vice versa. That's the case for life. 1-800-811-3003, if you'll join us with a question or comment on the air tonight. All right, so some of the stories in the news, we haven't really discussed Donald Trump talking about whether or not women should be charged if abortion were to be banned. And he said, yes, he felt that if it were banned and illegal, there should be some punishment. But he didn't understand the position that the pro-life movement has taken on this question, because the woman obtaining an abortion has never been the target, if you will, of the pro-life movement's activism. The target of that activism is the abortionist and the abortion industry. And so Donald Trump was not speaking for the pro-life movement when he answered in that way. Many people were sort of dancing on his grave saying, well, of course, you know, that's the logical conclusion of the pro-life worldview, and they don't like it that he was caught out, you know, not prepared to give the politically correct answer. But this isn't so. And if you will go to Americans United for Life and search one abortion was illegal, were women prosecuted, you'll find Clark Forsyth has done a wonderful job of talking about the problem being with the abortionist, who is seen as exploiting and working in ways that are almost predatory toward pregnant women who would seek out those services. You know, and for himself, of course, you know, this is not a political program, but if we look at the fact that his position has not been well thought out on the questions regarding pro-life, maybe that's all we need to say about the candidate. But he's not the only person confused on abortion. He's probably in his own camp when stating his position, because he seemed to alienate people on both sides with the way that he spoke about it, just as Hillary Clinton did when asked about constitutional rights before birth. And she stumbled off the script by saying unborn persons don't have a constitutional right. Well, persons do have rights. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. Our pro-life resource tonight is The Case for Life, and it is the definitive volume from Scott Klusendorf on equipping Christians to engage the culture. And if you'd like to give to receive a copy, as with our compliments, just call and join the conversation at 1-800-811-3003, and we would be very happy to share a copy with our first three callers to join us with a question, comment on the air. And the ground rules are you do not have to give your name or identifying information. Of course, we'll want to know how to mail it to you off the air, but you can choose an alias for yourself or speak with us anonymously, and we do understand the need for privacy on this program. 1-800-811-3003. So no one in the pro-life movement is advocating arresting women who are who would seek an abortion if abortion were to be banned. part of the disconnect, Kirsten Hawkins wrote for Town Hall this week, is that the political left's attempt to confuse the labels. If you look at, for example, what happened with Wendy Davis when she filibustered a law to ban abortions after preborn babies can feel pain, then she said she was pro-life. You know, as we're battling over terminology like that, everybody loses. We're trying to put abortion in a good light, trying to put the conversation in a different vein with those types of, you know, Planned Parenthood advocated, Kristen Hawkins notes, dropping the pro-choice label back in 2014, saying the publicly, that is, it didn't really mean anything any longer. Privately, Planned Parenthood said it was associated with the negative connotations of abortion as if it were a cavalier thing. So they went broader in 2014 and started using terms like women's health and reproductive freedom. So as these labels are falling by the wayside, the Associated Press decided that the pro-life movement wasn't going to be called as such, their preferred term for the movement. They were going to be called anti-abortion. The Associated Press made that unilateral decision a number of years ago. So Kristen Hawkins says, and I agree, you know, it's time to speak plainly and stop using vague language, have an honest and open conversation about abortion and when, if ever, it should be legal. So being pro-life is about empowering women and providing resources to those facing unplanned pregnancies. It centers around the belief that abortion is the taking of an innocent life and that abortion is not acceptable at any point in the pregnancy, believing that there are two victims in every abortion, the mother and the baby, that we want to see abortion made unthinkable and, yes, illegal. What do you think about this, by the way? How did you respond as you were listening to Donald Trump and listening to the reactions to his comments? Call us. Join our conversation tonight for a copy of The Case for Life. 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm Kim Cattola, and I'm really glad that you're listening. I appreciate it because, you know, these issues, as I mentioned, it's not that they're too complex for us to sort our way through, but they're tough. They're just tough. It's difficult to think about the loss of life involved with every abortion. It's difficult to think about where our hearts really stand on this when it comes to, you know, perhaps losing friends or becoming unpopular because of having a point of view that some would label as extreme. Or as anti-woman or anti-feminist or anti-women's rights. I know it's not simple and I know it's not easy, but standing for life is the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do. And it is indeed what women need. The way that God has designed us, there is no division between mother and child before birth. What women need is support. What women need is love. The abortion issue is all about love. Can you be the person to show a woman in need the difference that your love can make in her choices? 1-800-811-3003. We have a caller who wants to get a copy of Case for Life, and thank you for joining us so much tonight here on Cradle My Heart Radio. Welcome.
Hi, I was commenting on, I feel that Trump was speaking from his heart in saying that, standing up for right and wrong, he could see that it was wrong to kill a baby. But in the instance of drunk driving, the drunk driver is charged with a crime, and so is the person who sold him that alcohol. And I feel it's the same way with the abortion. That the women and he, I think he spoke from his heart to say that they're committing a crime as well. And I think if we ignore that that crime and say that the woman is innocent, it's just going to make a whole spiral. But if it's a crime to kill a baby, then it's a crime. And they need to be taught, and just like you stop a thief from doing something, you help them through it, and you take them away from that situation, and you help them get better. So I feel that it can be a new project in our society to help people not to get in that position and want to, commit an abortion.
So now, is this a position that you've held for a long time, or were you, would you say, influenced by hearing Donald Trump's comments?
Well, I suppose I've always held that. It's not just the woman or just the doctor. It's both. I mean, if a crime is committed, it's a crime.
Okay, thank you for your comments. And hold on now, and please stay with us off the air so that we can get you a copy of The Case for Life. I appreciate your call and your comments. Here's how I would respond. Clark Forsythe, as I said, has a brilliant article, and the headline is Why the States Did Not Prosecute Women for Abortion Before Roe versus Wade. And he posted this a good number of years ago, back in 2010, at the Americans United for Life website. Now, he is, by the way, the senior counsel for Americans United for Life. He's a legal scholar of the highest order, and he has taught the law at some of the leading institutions in the U.S. And I'm sorry I don't have his bio in front of me at this moment, but I want to say Stanford Law, a school of that caliber, if not Stanford itself. And what Clark Forsythe says, from a legal point of view, is that there are three judgments on which the states did not prosecute the women who were having abortions. And it's this. The point of abortion law is effective enforcement against abortionists. And the law would view the woman as the second victim of the abortionist. So prosecuting women is counterproductive to the goal of effective enforcement of the law against abortionists. And the irony is that instead of states prosecuting women, the exact opposite is true. So to protect their own hide, it was abortionists like Ruth Barnett, when Oregon last prosecuted her in 1968, who, when they were prosecuted, sought to haul the women they aborted into court. I could editorialize about cowardice, but I won't at this moment. But Forsythe goes on to say, as a matter of criminal evidentiary law, if the court treated the woman as an accomplice, she could not testify against the abortionist, and the case against the abortionist would be thrown out. And so, based on the record spanning 50 states over a century before Roe versus Wade, it is even more certain that the political claim that women might be questioned or prosecuted for a spontaneous miscarriage has no record in history. That's a scare tactic that the abortion industry uses to say that it would be devastating to women, even those who miscarry, if abortion is banned. How abortion law was enforced before Roe versus Wade, Forsythe notes that going back as far as English and colonial law, the criminal law classified those involved in crimes as principals and accomplices. So an accomplice aids or abets the crime, but the states didn't treat women who had the abortion as either principals or accomplices. As the Oregon Supreme Court held, again as late as 1968, the abortionist commits the act, and the woman aborted is the object of that act. And so as much as we may find it repugnant and try to take an absolute stand that a crime is a crime and she's willingly participating in the abortion procedure, legally that is not the way that it would play out. Nor, I have to emphasize this once more, nor is that the aim of the pro-life movement. I want you to read this article in full. We've posted it at our Facebook page. But while I appreciate the comments and even the sentiment of our caller, that's just not the way it would work if abortion is banned. The target would be the abortionist who is victimizing women. And there are any numbers of ways that women are victimized with abortion. They are taken advantage of in a vulnerable time. They are still subject to deceptive practices by the abortion industry, which lies, withholds ultrasound imagery, obscures fetal development information, which is, the subject of the informed consent laws in those states which do have them. We'll probably revisit this case, and we need this question, I should say, and we need to in future episodes of Cradle My Heart Radio, because I'll tell you, as someone who had an abortion, before I knew what the pro-life movement was all about, I wanted to go nowhere near it because I imagined that I would be shunned and hated and vilified as a murderer. Please, we've got to get our hearts right. We've got to let the pro-life movement, we've got to be, as we stand against abortion and stand for life, we've got to be coming from a place of love. And I'm not saying that our caller wasn't speaking in a loving way about rehabilitation and so on, but we've got to lead with love and realize that, I haven't even mentioned the majority of women who say they felt coerced into abortion. So, yes, let's revisit this on an upcoming broadcast. So I hope that you'll be here to hear it. In the meantime, go to cradlemyheart.org and please do browse our resources and check our social media for reactions to stories in the news. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be here next week. Hope you will be too. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening. Your support makes this podcast stream possible. Information is available at myfaithradio.com.